As everyone's seventh favorite boy band, NKOTB, said, hangin' tough. And this is the Fat Man Chronicles.
I was not hiding. I was unsure. And now
welcome to episode 38 of the Fat Man Chronicles. I am Pete, and I've been ditched by my co-host Gretchen. She is out in Arizona visiting her friend Anne and her newborn twin boys. So I was going solo this week and had to decide, am I going to just do an episode by myself, like some, you know, podcasters do, like our friend Daryl does over a lot over at So This Is Fitness, or do an interview so you don't have to hear me droning on. And we opted for an interview. So we're going to jump right into that and come back next week with a full episode with Gretchen and I. And we're going to have an update for you. And you'll hear a preview of the big topic that we're going to talk about next week during the interview here with Amy Wehrman. So let's just get on over to it and hear this great interview. Now we go over to an interview with Amy Wehrman. Amy is an open water swimmer, which to me is like Charlie Brown's teacher, because I'm not a swimmer and I cannot wait to learn more about this. I've heard her on another podcast, our friends over at Endurance for Everyone, and it was super enlightening. And I'm finding her to be a huge inspiration as I've gotten to connect with her. Amy, welcome to the Fat Man Chronicles.
Hi, Pete. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you tonight?
I am good. Very good.
Oh, excellent. So what we'll do is we'll just start with a little bit of background. So that way people can get to know you a little bit, and I'll get to know you a little bit. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what your background is, a little bit about how you grew up and how you got into the swimming game.
Okay. Well, I grew up, Pete, on the Jersey Shore. Stone Harbor, New Jersey is my hometown. I spent every summer there of my life from the year I was born. And when I was 13, I believe it was, we moved down there year round. So I went to high school down there, and I have a lot of family and friends on the Jersey Shore. So I grew up at the beach swimming in the ocean. I failed a swim test at the YMCA in Pennsylvania, I think when I was probably about 8 years old. I couldn't swim to the wall of the pool, and so they failed me. But yet I was that kid who could swim in the ocean for 8 hours a day, and my mom could not get me out of the water. So I was a little fish
what's the difference there? I'm super curious about that.
I don't know. I just know that, honestly, I think it was probably because I was a chubby little kid and they assumed I couldn't swim well enough to pass me. But that's just probably, that might just be some of my, you know, fat shaming baggage. But I remember I failed the test and I had a crush on a lifeguard at the shore, and I couldn't wait to show him my certificate that said I failed, because I didn't understand that I had failed, and my mom had to explain to me that I had not passed the swimming test at the Y. but I don't know. I guess I could, I don't remember. I was very little, but I remember, we over the years we laugh about it. And, because I could literally stay in the ocean and ride the waves and jump the waves and dive under the waves and have no fear of the waves, at a very young age. And I pretty much got that from my dad. My dad was the same way. And we spent hours and hours in the Atlantic Ocean.
Wow, that's amazing. So from that early on, you're already figuring out like how to just be out there in the open water for a long time. And you said that you were a chubby kid. So have you battled weight your entire life then?
Yes. Yes. I thought that I did. I mean, my perspective was that I was chubby because I compared myself to other people, you know, to my friends, for example. So yes, I was chubby, but I would say compared to today's kids, I was not, you know, with obesity, you know, childhood obesity being such an epidemic right now, I would fit right in. But at that time I was always the chubby kid. And I swam, but I didn't, I never swam in pools or competitively. I didn't know I was a good swimmer. I didn't ever think that I could be an athlete. My brothers were lifeguards. They were the athletes in our family, not me. And I have a big family. I'm the baby of seven and a bunch of nieces and nephews who are like brothers and sisters who are closer in age to me than my siblings. But I was comfortable in open water, but as I got older and started gaining weight and not living a healthy lifestyle, I kind of lost touch with that connection. I mean, over the years, I would reconnect. You know, you sit out on January 1st to get in shape, and I would start swimming in the pool. I lived in Florida. I'd start swimming in the pool, and I would connect there. But I lived in Sanibel Island, Florida for 10 years and never appreciated the Gulf of Mexico like I would appreciate it now if I lived there.
That's amazing. So in high school, you're not an athlete. You're not doing any sports. You're not swimming competitively.
No.
So when does the love of, I mean, so did you lose your love of swimming? Like, why does it go away in there?
No, I think I was focused on a lot of other things that weren't healthy. And I would go to the beach with my friends. You know, when we lived in Florida, we'd have beach days, and that was always exciting. I didn't take care of my skin. I wouldn't protect my skin, so I'd always end up with sunburns. And that's a real area of contention for me now, because I'm very pro, you know, protecting our skin when we're in the sun these days. But I loved looking at the water and doing sunset, you know, going and watching the sunset over the water. But I don't think I had I certainly didn't have the connection that I have now. But slowly, it came back in my 30s. I don't know if you want me to kind of go on a progression.
Sure.
Here, but in my 30s, I had lived in Florida for 10 years in my 20s, and it was formative years. A lot changed for me. I had some spiritual, you know, changes happen, enlightening things in my life, and made some real significant changes towards better health spiritually and physically. And I moved back to Pennsylvania, but to be closer to my family. I was missing my family a lot and my nieces and nephews, and so I came back to Pennsylvania, and I was in my 30s, and I had gained a bunch of weight. In my early 20s, when I first moved to Florida, I had lost a bunch of weight and was kind of on a healthy path, but I didn't really learn the tools that you need to like change for a lifetime. You know, I was just very focused on getting the weight off and not doing what I would need to do to sustain that.
So how were you doing it then? How are you losing, like, how did you lose that first big chunk of weight?
That big chunk of weight, I was 23 years old. And my dad, he passed away last year, but he was obese his whole life and was always working on trying to lose weight and being healthier. And we joined a program at a hospital together that was a nutrition focused and a workout focused program. There was a gym there, and I was brand new to Florida. So I didn't have any friends or, you know, besides my parents and their friends who I loved and adored. But, I just spent my time working out, and I lost 52 pounds. My lowest weight I weighed at that after I'm losing 52 pounds with 199 pounds, I got down below 200. And it was awesome. But like I said, I didn't deal with a lot of emotion. I wasn't dealing with the emotional things in my life that were causing me to eat the way that I did. And I gained that 52 pounds back over a period of like 20 years. I gained 100 pounds.
So in that program, obviously the weight loss part worked, but you didn't really get the tools that you needed for maintenance. Was it because of the program, the whatever they were telling you or, you know, to eat, or is it more on all, do you think more on that, like why we eat side?
Right. Absolutely. I think that they did a great job. The nutritionist was a bit of a quirky person, but I really liked her and I learned a lot from her. But she was very much like, you just do this. This is what you do. This is how you live. You know, I didn't really dig deep and figure out some of the issues that I had that had caused my eating, you know, that was causing me to overeat. And there were some years in my life that I was binge eating pretty badly. And, you know, so I wasn't dealing with I really needed probably more counseling, which I did over the years, get on and off. But it wasn't until later in my 20s that I really made some changes emotionally. And like I said, spiritually, and had a community of people to support me, in that way, besides my parents and my siblings, of course. But even then, that's not something that happens overnight, right? And I loved to eat and I wasn't exercising. And I would have to say, I didn't really understand a lot about nutrition, although I had been raised in a household where my mother controlled all, because my dad was overweight. We grew up with the healthiest, for the most part, of foods in our house. You know, I was that kid that went to my friend's house to eat junk cereal because we never, ever had junk cereal in our house. And so then when I would go to my friend's house, I would eat the whole box of cereal because I hadn't had it in a year. You know, God bless my mom. She literally was doing the absolute best that she could. She had, you know, was 42 years old when she had me. So when I was growing up, she was not, you know, this young mom and had six kids already, you know, but she, it came natural to her. My mom was naturally a healthy eater, and my dad and I were naturally not. And so, but yeah, you know, so then in my 30s, I moved back up here and I was really unhealthy. I mean, I had not had a menstrual for years, and I was I had sleep apnea that had been undiagnosed for some years. And so when I moved back up here and had really decent insurance, I did start taking care of some of those things, and my health started to improve a little bit. But I still wasn't I just didn't have the tools really to lose the weight, you know, to take weight off. And then I don't remember what happened to change it in my 30s, but I would say it was around I can't remember how old I was, but I know it was around 2003. I was going through a job transition that was painful. I was getting laid off from a job. I was starting my cookie business. I had a cookie business for some years. And somebody challenged me to try getting back into the pool. My dad challenged me to get back in the pool, you know. And so, but he challenged me because somebody else kind of came along and said, well, this is where you could go. And I went, I walked into a pool called EMAC, EMAS Aquatic Club. At the time, a pool that I swam at for years, it was a bubble over it in the wintertime and open in the summertime. And I actually started with water aerobics. And because I was huge, Pete, and I was really out of shape. And so these joyful ladies invited me into this pool and showed me, you know, what type of swimsuit to get and how to get a good workout in the water. And these ladies were some badass fitness ladies. I'm telling you, like, they were very fit, doing deep water running. And many of them, you know, at the time older than me and having health issues, but really powering through and getting good workouts in. And one day, one night, it would be late at night that we the classes were like at 7, and it was the middle of winter time. One night after the class, I thought, I wonder if I could swim a lap. And I swam a lap, and then I swam two laps, and I started swimming laps, just a couple after every class. And within a very short time, I had swam. I found, you know, asked somebody what about, I didn't know the distance. I didn't understand. Somebody said, well, if you swim 32 laps, 32 lengths, that's a half a mile. And one night I swam a half a mile, and I was literally floored.
Yeah. I haven't swum, just so you know, I haven't done that in my entire life.
Oh, really? Yeah. No. Half mile is like warm up now. But, you know, at the time, I mean, I'm still slow. So a half mile for me is still, you know, I mean, I'm a very slow swimmer right now until this weight comes off, hoping that as the weight, more and more weight comes off, that I'm going to be a little bit faster, not because I care what people think but more because I have to carve out a lot more time in my life to swim than most of my friends if I want to get the distance that other people are getting.
Right. I want to rewind for just a second. While you're struggling with this weight, you have a cookie business?
Yes.
How helpful was that?
Yes. That was hard.
I mean, it sounds like alcoholic making, right, you know, gin or something.
Right. And you know what? There were people that said that at the time, and I would really shoot them down pretty fast, because I would be like, listen, just because I make these cookies doesn't mean I sit around all day and eat them. But I did have a sugar addiction, you know, and like most overweight, obese people, you know, who aren't watching their weight, you know, who aren't nutrition, you know, watching their nutrition. I was addicted to carbs. I wasn't eating my cookies as much. I mean, I did eat them because, believe it or not, I liked them. They were really good. But I ate the stress of having a cookie business. It took off pretty fast, too fast actually. And it was feast or famine. I would be slammed for some months, and then I would be not able to pay any of my bills, and my family and my church would be paying my bills for me to get me through to the next busy season, you know? So, the owning, you know, having my own business and having part-time workers and begging people to come help me at night to do production orders, because I had big orders, a lot of really cool. I did custom cookies for a lot of very special events over the years, and weddings, very intricate. Like, my cookies were $3 and $4 a piece. And the business almost destroyed me, to be honest with you. But swimming, I did continue to swim, and it was like I believe that swimming in that pool is what helped me survive that self-employment.
I can relate to that.
So I would eat, I would get up at 5-6 o'clock in the morning. I would do all my baking, and they were all hand cut, small batch made hand cut cookies. I have about close to 1,000 cookie cutters in 1,000 of different, you know, hundreds of different shapes and very unique shapes and things like that. And I would do my production, my cookie, you know, I'd make the dough the night before, I'd chill overnight, I'd roll out, do all my baking, hours of baking. And then I would run out to the pool to get a swim, and I wouldn't want to go back. I would be dreading going back to the studio to paint all night. And usually one of my precious nieces or friends was coming to rescue me and help me paint cookies. I would paint into the middle of the night sometimes. But I was thankful I had that swimming, but I also was handling that stress by stopping at Wawa, is our wonderful a convenience store, awesome convenience store that we have here in Pennsylvania. I'd stop at Wawa and, you know, get a hoagie and, you know, my favorite chips or whatever. I thought, because in my mind, you know, I was starting to pay attention to more attention to nutrition because it was required for swimming, but I had eating issues. And so I would still go to my comfort foods to handle the stress I was dealing with having my own business.
So when do you return, like, when do you go back to this open water swimming?
So in 2008, I had, several years before that, I had started the cookie business in 2003, totally burned out, was going to need to take out a bunch of business loans to grow my business. And I had some, connections that would have really taken off, but I was so burned out. One Christmas, I was so broke in November, I went and took a part-time job and at a company very close by. And within a couple weeks, this company never posted full-time positions. They posted some positions that offered full benefits. And at the time, I was paying these ridiculous fees for my own benefits in the Chamber of Commerce. And so I applied for one of these jobs. I was brand new to the company, and I got one of those positions. And it was the most amazing blessing. I can see so clearly now why it happened. I was able to swim. I continued to make cookies, but I scaled back, and I had this great job. Well, in 2008, I had been swimming regularly. I had started to walk. In the summer, I think it was summer of 2007, I had started a walking program, and I live in a very hilly town, and I started walking the hills, and I lost, I think it was 34 pounds. And I was feeling great, but I was still, of course, over 300 pounds. And at that point, I was still over 300 pounds. And so I was getting injury after injury after injury because I was basically wrecking my knees. But I had arthritis. Our whole family, we have arthritis in our genetics. So our whole family, even the athletes in our family, my brother is an athlete who has had two hip replacements. We all have very bad joints. So I started walking. I lost weight. Then I bought a bike. And that was like I was a kid again. I absolutely fell in love with biking, and I would wake up and some days I couldn't decide. I would literally bike and swim early in the morning because I couldn't decide. I loved them both so much. And Christmas of 2007, I made an announcement to my family. I'm doing a triathlon. I didn't know how I was going to do it. Everybody was supportive, but in my world, of course, people were like, how is a 300 pound plus person going to do a triathlon? And I started training. Throughout the winter, I would go to the Ironton Rail Trail and ride my bike 15 miles on the trail in the middle of sleet. It would be raining. It would be freezing cold and muddy. And I would be riding my bike training for this triathlon. And, in July of 2008, I did my first triathlon. So I had to be open, you know, I had to be swimming in a pool, but I had to be, it never even occurred to me that I couldn't open water swim. I always looked at it like I could jump into any lake, river, or ocean and swim, even if I hadn't done it in 10 years. And that's what I did. I jumped in the Schuylkill River and swam. And biked 18 miles and walked a 5K and did my first triathlon.
Wow. So that was 10 years ago.
Yes.
Like right around now, just next month, right?
It was. That's right. And it was a significant time because, as I mentioned to you, I'm the youngest of seven. And the next sister up from me in age is Lisa. She was my best friend in the whole wide world. She lived a mile away with her family, her awesome husband and three kids. And we were really enjoying those years of being together after me living in Florida for so many years. And some things had changed in both of our lives that really brought us close together spiritually and things like that. So we were very close, and she was diagnosed with cancer right around the time of my triathlon. And so I was going through the greatest heartbreak of my life. And that was in July, and my sister was diagnosed with level 4 lung cancer and died in September.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So this 10-year mark is pretty significant because it's 10 years that I've lived without her, and I can't believe it, because at the time I just didn't understand or know how I was going to live without her. And then God showed me very clearly how I was going to do it, and it was through my awesome family and through pursuing my sport and actually sorry, it's hard to say it without crying, but just discovering that I could be an athlete.
Well, that's huge, right? I mean, and I think that's been one of the things that I've struggled with too. I mean, I definitely relate to that. You know, when we're bigger, and we can do amazing things, people kind of view it like, I don't know, almost like a sideshow, I feel. Like, oh,
yes.
That's great that
yes.
you do that. Like it's a sideshow, though. But, you know, you're not going to be up front. You're not going to be the fast one.
Yes.
You know, and so it takes a long time to come to grips with the fact that
yes.
we do amazing things with whatever body we have at the time.
Yes.
And the difference to me is that we can lose weight. We can get faster, we can get better, but we, you know, if you've got a closed mind, it sometimes it takes a little bit more effort. So I'm very glad that to hear you say that you're an athlete, because that's absolutely true.
It is absolutely the most amazing thing, Pete, when you realize it, because even in high school, I said I wasn't an athlete. I did play on the tennis team in high school, but I never played because I was too slow, because I was too fat, you know. So and I didn't know that I could go out and run and lose a little bit of that weight. That didn't even occur to me. And to be honest with you, I don't think I wanted to. I didn't care. I worked all the time. I loved to work. I always had a job from the time I was 14. So I worked and I partied a lot in high school and college, and I was extremely social, had loads of friends, dated a lot, way too much, and was much more about my social life and being with people, than, you know, furthering my health, you know, but 10 years I've developed this, you know, I've been an athlete since I did that first triathlon, as far as I'm concerned, you know, and I would say over the years, I'm not, you know, I don't feel like I'm boasting to say that I know I've inspired a lot of people. But I will tell you, it does get tiring being a hero because you're fat. I find it extremely exhausting at times. I mean, I'm not diminishing that, the power that you have to be an overcomer and to show people that you can, you know, to inspire people. But I would, my desire is to be a little bit more average and maybe inspire in other ways, not because I'm necessarily overweight and killing myself running or biking or swimming,
right.
And which I did do. I wrecked my knees, grieving my sister in 2000. She died in September of 2008. And in the winter, I love winter, Pete. I'm sure you've realized that by now, because my favorite swimming is winter swimming. In the winter of 2009, I was grieving my sister so deeply, and I grieved well. I really believe that I did it the right way for me. I ran in the woods on a trail that I loved, that brought me so much peace and comfort. But because I was hurting emotionally so bad, I didn't realize that I was literally wrecking my knees. And I'm not one of those people that says running, oh, nobody should run, it's bad for your knees. I'm not that person. But for me, with my history and with the way I was doing it and without proper coaching and such, I wrecked my knees. I'm bone on bone knees now because of that time of running. And they've just gotten worse over the years because my weight, you know, after my sister died, I gained some of that weight back. And some of it, I never understood what people meant when they said, oh, it came on and I didn't even know it was coming on. I used to think that was stupid. I used to think, how could you not know you're gaining weight? I'm so aware of it. Every pound I gain, I'm so aware of it. But that is what happened with me over a period of many years because you're working out. And so you think it's like a pass.
Yeah. And it's not. I mean, it's definitely not, right? Weight is gain and lost in the kitchen, first and foremost.
Yes, absolutely. That 80-20 thing, 80% diet, 20% exercise, I am proof of that because I worked out like crazy. And, I mean, don't get me wrong. When I was training for races, I mean, I was that person that packed my little, you know, macros lunch. You know what I mean? I was that person. I was not somebody that ate, you know, pizza or cheesesteaks every day for lunch. I never ordered out. And when I, in the workplace, I was the person that always packed my lunch when everybody else was ordering out. But I started getting it almost like I still had so many issues with my eating that I would think like I deserved now, like I would deserve to then overeat at night, you know, and often by myself because I was, you know, hiding. I didn't hide from anybody. Everybody in my life knows darn well what my issues are, especially in my life because I'm so engaged and close to so many of the people in my life. But I just was kind of in denial, to be honest with you. Food was a comfort to me, and I was not willing to give it up.
Yeah, that's a tough one, right? When I think a lot of us use it that way, and then you know our next episode. Here's a little preview. The one after, you know, next week, we're going to talk about stress and how that relates to eating and weight gain. And it's a remarkable cycle. That there's a lot of physiology behind it that people don't understand, you know, people that don't have to deal with it, that don't have those triggers are just like, well, just don't eat or eat something different. And it's not quite how it works. And there's a really interesting thing. So glad you brought it up. It gives a little preview.
Could I?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. I just want to interject something there because I'm sure you're going to talk about this next week. And I can't wait to hear that episode because this is so crucial in my life that the stress factor is so crucial because everybody sees me as a very joyful person and I am fairly joyful and I'm serious. I'm a pretty intense person, but I'm stressed out all the time. I live stressed out. It's part of who I think I am, but it's changing. And, you know, I mean, I have a boss that tells me 1,000 times a week, just let it go. This isn't life and death. What are you worrying about? You know, I mean, and siblings that tell me that, and my own parents before they passed. You know, saying just stop worrying so much. You know, I tend to be very intense about things. And I'm telling you, you can eat the perfect diet, but if your body is full of stress, and I guess I want to say anxiety, I don't believe I have clinical anxiety per se, but I, you know, honest to God, you won't lose anything. I mean, you could eat so healthy and exercise. If your body is stressed, it goes into like a survival mode, just kind of staying right where it is. I think I don't know the science behind it, and I'm anxious to hear, you know, what you guys have to say on the next show about it.
Yeah, for sure. We'll get into some of that science because I've been studying it a lot lately because I've caught myself backsliding. Because of stressors and, you know, the good news is I'm conscious of it. The bad news is I gained some weight in between there. You know, not that I care about what the scale says as much as I care about how my clothes fit. And, you know, when the new clothes got tight, this week, I went, yes. Uh-oh, okay, so what's going yep. on? And you do some self-exam. I mean, you know how it is. You do some self-examination. You try to figure it out, and then boom. And, you know, for me, it's honestly a tough week. It's been very, very tough at work for several reasons. And Gretchen's out of town. My mom and dad are out of town. So I'm single dad, right? So I've always had an appreciation for single parents. And now I've got an even deeper appreciation for them, like each time. And Michaela's a cakewalk. So I tried to convince my older kids that they should be here and help all week, but they they wanted to be near their friends at home with their with their mom. So
it's, it is summertime.
It is. I know. How dare them? But anyway, so back to you, which is what this is really about. So Will, at this point, you've done a triathlon. Your sister's unfortunate and untimely passing gets you to do even more working out. You start to figure some things out. When do you get into, well, as we were chatting earlier, you called it wild swimming, which I'm super curious to hear more about. Like, when do you get into this world that, you know, is foreign to me? To me, it seems insane. You were saying it's more average, but, you know, I think to a lot of people, it will seem weird, that somebody can be out in the water for hours and hours and hours. Because we just don't do that as a society often. I know that you've got a chunk that does. I would relate it, before I let you start into it, I relate it to ultra running. So, you know, somebody might think that a 5K or 3.1 miles is far, and there are people out there doing 100 miles, 200 miles, 10-day events, you know. So I think it's similar in that respect. But I'm really curious to hear about how you got to that point and kind of what that progression was.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, over the years, I was just always drawn, since I moved back to Pennsylvania, some of my siblings and family still live down at the Jersey Shore, so I would take vacations, and it was always like, get Amy to the water. Like, that was, you know, because I tend to be pretty intense about whatever job I have, I take it very seriously and tend to be pretty stressed out about it, and so not that those two things always need to correlate with each other, but I, you know, would try to get to the ocean, you know, but, you know, it's hard to do open water swimming in the ocean, you know, on the Jersey Shore, because you can't just get in and swim. You know, there's this tiny little area you're allowed to swim in. The lifeguards don't want you out of that area. There's this stigma about open water swimming, I think, in our country, in the United States, that everything's dangerous, that any water, if you're over your head or if it's cold, it's dangerous, you're going to die, you know? And because everybody is so concerned about liability, you're not allowed to do that, you know? So, but I did, you know, I was looking for opportunities. I would go to like train, I would do races. I would just sign up for races just so I could get a quarter mile swim. And it was the most, you know, dissatisfying thing to get in the water. As quickly as you're in, you're out. And I would be like, man, can't I just swim another mile in this water, you know? But about what would have been 4 years? Oh gosh, it was 4 years ago, just almost this week, or in the last couple of weeks, I had an opportunity to go to the Finger Lakes in New York with my sister that I mentioned, Lisa. She has three girls who are grown and are like the apple of my eye. And they're starting to have kids. And so their little ones are the grandchildren I will never have because I've never been married and don't have any of my own kids. They are like my beloved. So the first little girl that was born to that family was turning one, and her mom and dad, and she lived up in Rochester, New York. So we planned a weekend up on Lake Kinesis, and I tucked my goggles and my suit, of course, into my bag. You know, I knew we'd probably be jumping in the lake. And when I saw that lake on that Friday night, I just thought, could I swim across that lake? And the next morning we had a bunch of activities planned, but it was pretty low key. And I said to somebody, do you guys think I could swim across that lake? And they said, yeah, why don't you try it? And one of my nephews was planning to kayak, and I said, "Will you kayak along?" He said, "Sure." And so we headed out, and I swam 2 miles. I swam a mile across and a mile back. It was the longest swim I had ever done in open water without stopping, you know. And I literally was, I can't even believe it was only 4 years ago, because it feels like I've been swimming a lot longer than that. But it just opened me up. Like, I was like, I have got, now I had been swimming in lakes for races, but the whole solo thing for me is huge. Like, just being by myself. And in that lake, Lake Kinesis is 80 feet deep in the middle. To me, being in the deeper the water, the better, as long as it's not like crazy rip currents or something.
How long did that first 2 mile swim take you?
Good question. Very good question. It took me over 2 hours. I was the same, pretty much the same pace as I am to this day. I swim about a mile an hour. I say that, but recently I did a mile in open water in 48 minutes, you know, so my time is improving a little bit. You know, I didn't have a tracker. I didn't have a Garmin watch at that time. We were, you know, we're on our phones later that night trying to figure out, like, well, what house is that across there? Do you think we drove around the lake to figure out, trying to figure out which house so we could put it in the GPS? The GPS wouldn't take you across the lake, so it wouldn't tell us. But I, just from my time, I, you know, and so asking around, and people said, oh, it's about a mile over. So that's kind of how I figured that I had done 2 miles.
Wow, that's amazing. And now what are you doing? Like, that just keeps building. And because I mean, I see the times on, I see some of your swims, and I mean,
right.
They're
the longest swim I ever did, Pete, was last summer. I built up to it. I did a 6 mile swim by myself. And now that is not, and when I say by myself, I didn't have a kayaker or anybody with me. I headed out into my lake with all my nutrition and fluids packed in my dry bag. And that is what some people would call wild swimming, because it's a little bit on the edge, right? Swimming by yourself. But guess what? You know, it's a very safe lake. I have a swim buoy. I'm visible to the boaters. I know the lake inside and out. I know how to be safe in it, and I know what I can do. And you know what? I keep telling people, if I die out there, so be it. You know, people trail run by themselves, 30-mile training runs out on trails, and I don't understand. I really have issues with, why is that okay, but it's not okay for me to swim? Well, what is the difference? You were drowned. What if you have a heart attack on the trail? You're going to fall down and die. Or what if a bear attacks you? Or you know what I mean?
So, yeah, I do. But I could tell you, I could tell you from my perspective, it's less on the what could happen or the what ifs. It's more about what we're familiar with, right? We walk on the earth every single day.
Right.
We don't get in water every day. So it's the unfamiliar that's going to be so scary to people. But to you, my guess is that it's more natural for you to get into the lake and swim than it is to walk half a mile on a treadmill.
Well, because I can't walk half a mile on a treadmill.
Well, let's just pretend your knees are good.
In the next weeks, I will be, and I'm sure we're going to talk about that at some point. Yeah. But I'm walking much better even this week. I am on my fourth day, and this is a miracle, Pete. After losing 52 pounds, I'm on my fourth day in a row of nothing for pain. I've taken nothing for my knee pain in 4 days.
That's fantastic.
And it's been years since I've gone a day without taking something for my pain.
That's awesome.
So I will be walking more as the weight continues to come off. And I have a treadmill being delivered. Actually, my sister's treadmill is being delivered here on Saturday, because in the next weeks, I'm going to have to be doing a lot of walking, probably every hour, because of some rehab. And so I need that on the treadmill, because I don't feel, you know, if it's 90 degrees, I'm not going to want to be going down my steps of my apartment, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. Well, before we get to that, I have a couple of questions about this, you know, super long, time on the water. So you said you have a dry bag. So does that like just kind of float behind you? The buoy, like does that just float behind you?
Yeah. Well, it's called a buoy, but I think that's confusing to people because of the, you know, the pull buoys that you put between, well, maybe you don't, but in like master swimming or people who swim in pools who do these pretty serious workouts, they put, there's these little buoys that you, these little foam things that you put between your legs to help you to train your legs to stay together when you're swimming and to keep your hips in proper alignment. That's called a buoy. And so I think sometimes people get confused. There's another product called a swim buoy. I call it a toe float, which is what it's called in the UK. The real open water swimmers across the pond call it a toe float, and so do I. It's a balloon. It's a bag, basically, that is a dry bag that you can put. When we go to the lake, I might leave something at the side of the lake, like my shoes, and I usually have a sign that I put on it, do not, these belong to a swimmer that's in the lake, because people will throw them out thinking they're trash. But I take anything that's valuable goes into my dry bag. So anything I leave at the side of the lake, if it got stolen, okay, it gets stolen. But I don't want my keys to be stolen or my car or my phone. I have an emergency phone. I have two. I have an iPhone and an old iPhone that has that is on my plan that I take with me as an emergency phone in my dry bag when I swim.
And that just that floats behind you. I guess I'm having trouble picturing it.
Sure, sorry, and I can send you some pictures later. It floats behind you, and it's about 16 inches long. Some are bigger. At some point, I would like to start doing swim packing the way people are doing bike packing and backpacking. I would like to start doing like overnight swim packing adventures, and I will need a much larger swim buoy to carry that equipment. It blows up. So you put it in the dry, you put your valuables in and then you fold it down like a dry bag, you know, kayaking dry bag, you know, that it keeps the water out because it's folded a bunch of times. And then there's a valve that you blow it up and it's like a balloon and it comes along behind you. And this, I'll tell you, at Blue Marsh Lake where we swim, we're advocates. We are all about the safety in open water. We're not trying to be rebels. We're just trying to educate people and be good ambassadors for our sport and educate people of what they can do to be as safe as possible in the water. And we're at, like my group that I swim with, we all believe very strongly about never swimming in open water without a buoy. I mean, unless it's an organized race and you're with, you know, you're not allowed to use it or something like that. Because the boats can see you. The boats come through. Where we swim, it's a no-wake area, so they're coming pretty slow for some miles. We can swim for miles in a no-wake area in our lake. But those boaters, they won't see you otherwise. They wouldn't be, you know, so it gives them visibility. Some people think it's like, is it a life preserver? I mean, yes. You know, the other day we did a sunset swim, and we stopped in the middle of the lake to chat for a while. And I kind of was leaning on my buoy. I can usually float pretty well. But since I'm losing weight, I am realizing I'm starting to have an appreciation for how hard it is for some people to stay afloat in water as I'm losing weight. Cause I have noticed that my doggy paddling is a little bit more rigorous than it used to be. I used to not have to paddle at all. I could float. I keep telling people, even if I did have an emergency, I wouldn't go under because I float. I have so much flotation on my body that I would just float on top.
That's a nice safety mechanism, but that's going away.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's going away. Yeah.
So I have one more question.
Sure.
I have one more question.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say that 6 mile swim, that was a big event for me. That was, I planned it. I strategized the weather. I had nutrition planned, but it wasn't a part of a race or anything. I just set out for myself. The day that I actually set out to do it, I was planning to do 5 miles. And as I was swimming at about mile two, I felt so incredibly strong. I said, I got to go for my 6. And you probably wouldn't know this, but in our sport, 6 miles is a marathon. Marathon swimming is a 10K. So I pretty much See, I guess you could call me a marathon swimmer, but it's not on the books anywhere. It's only in my Garmin.
Well, that counts to me. For sure. I mean, I guess I have a couple more questions. One is about, one is about sunscreen. So, you know, I don't really get in the water. I don't take my shirt off because nobody needs to see that. So, you know, I do okay from a sunscreen perspective, like just on, but I don't get in the water. So do you have to reapply sunscreen, or are there a specific one that like you would recommend, or like, how does that work when you're out there for so long?
I did reapply that day. I got out on the side of the lake and put more on. I just use like a sport spray, but I will tell you, and you probably saw some pictures maybe on my Facebook page, Pete, of other swimmers that are covered in white.
Yeah.
That is flat out pure zinc oxide and something called butt butter or some, there's some other product, B-U-T-T something, that, for example, my coach and mentor, Louise Darlington, she's training for the English Channel. When we were in the Long Island Sound last weekend, she was planning to be in the water 8 hours at the time. She was testing, you know, she's getting ready. Her English Channel swim is in August. So she's testing products. She was covered, her whole back of her body that was going to be exposed to sun was total coverage with this product. And eventually I'm going to need to be more willing to do that. But it's a very hard thing to do by yourself, and you have to have special stuff to clean it off when you get home. You know, it's very, very messy. And so I just reapply. Now that was last summer. This summer, I haven't done as many long swims yet. I'm extremely more conscious of the sun because of some things that have happened in our family. We have a family member who has been diagnosed with a sun related condition. And so I'm like hyper aware of UV rays right now.
Sure.
And so to be honest with you, I wouldn't, unless I had to, I wouldn't do a swim in the middle of the day. I just would never do that now. I swim at night, in the evening before sunset, or if we're swimming in the morning, we start at 6 a.m. and still, it's still too much sun by 10 o'clock, right? If I go out to do a 4 mile swim and I'm coming back in by 10, I'm feeling a little bit crispy if I haven't reapplied. But I'm pretty proud of myself. I was looking at myself in the mirror just this morning, and I was thinking, you know what, Aim, for the end of June, last year at the end of June, I was black already because I tan so much easily. I was so dark, and I'm not this year, and I'm kind of proud of that.
Nice. How far is the English Channel?
Oh, good question.
I guess I have Google. I should.
Yeah, and I always forget because I'm not – I may be an English Channel enthusiast for other swimmers. It's not necessarily something I aspire to. But I think it's 20. It can be anywhere between 18 and 21, or you know, somewhere around 18, 20, 21 miles.
All right. So the English Channel is 112 miles at its widest and 20 miles at its narrowest.
Right.
And the west end, it's about 21 miles across on the east. So it looks like that people probably do that 20, 21 miles. But you said that's not really a goal.
I don't know. We'll have to see what happens, Pete. I just don't. I mean, I'm not saying I don't want to do it or that I don't, you know, there's not any reason, but to be honest with you, I would like to swim the length of my lake before I feel like I even need to swim the English Channel, but that might progression. That might be the more I swim. I mean, for in our sport, that's the Super Bowl. The English Channel is the Super Bowl.
Right.
And I am absolutely thrilled for my friends who are working and training for that and being invited to swim with somebody who's training for that is quite an honor because they are extremely focused and they don't need rigmarole. And when they invite you to come along, it's a real honor. So it, just being in the Long Island Sound last weekend with Louise is such an honor. The water was 57 degrees, which was very cold for for, I mean, for not as much for us because we swam all winter, but for long swims, I had a couple swim friends say, what do you mean you did a 4 mile swim in 57? I'm like, well, yeah. They're like, well, that's the longest you've ever done in that cold. I'm like, well, yeah, I guess it was, you know? So it was interesting. I did really well. I did really well in that 57 degree water. So.
Well, that's great. Well, I got to imagine like anything else when you're with swimmers like that, even just getting to the privilege of training with them, that it raises you up. It raises your confidence and all that. So
absolutely.
All right. Well, you've talked, you know, a little bit in hints about it, but you know, you've been losing weight leading up to hopefully losing a lot of weight, right? I assume that's the goal. Why don't you share kind of your journey on the weight side of everything?
Sure. So, you know, I shared a lot about what's happened over these last years, you know, and grief and gaining and last, in 2006, September of 2016, my mom died. She was 92 years old. I had been taking care of her along with my siblings, not by myself, but taking care of my parents for some years. And it was very stressful. And then my dad hung on for 6 more months. So he died in March of 2017. And that, was a difficult year. And I unexpectedly, and again, you know, how do you gain weight? I always say to people, how do you gain weight and not know it? But guess what? I was in denial and I was weighing myself, but I was just like mentally in denial. You know, all through my triathlon years, I maintained a weight. My lowest weight was for my first triathlon was 306. And the most I would jump up is about 320. And that was bad. When I got up to 320 or 322, that was really bad. One time in 2013, I jumped down to 299 and I was thrilled. But I didn't sustain what I was doing at that time because of some other stressful things. I was in a relationship that was ending and it was just a very hard time. But so in this last year since my dad died, since March 2017, from last March to January 2018, I ended up weighing in January at my yearly physical 345 pounds. So essentially I had gained 25 pounds from my highest comfort weight. And I realized for many people, Pete, hearing that 320 was comfortable seems insane, but that was the, you know, that I had maintained over 300 for many. I wasn't somebody who had, you know, been 200 just 3 years ago. I mean, I had maintained all through my 30s and 40s being over 300 pounds. But you know what? Going up from 320 to 345, that is a breaking point. And I was not feeling well in January. I was really not feeling well. And I went into the doctor's. And my doctor has been on my case for some years, of course, like any good doctor would be for me to lose weight, but she also thinks I'm a superhero. So there was this pull between her being like, come on, you got to do something. And oh my gosh, how do you do everything you do? You know, as far as my swimming and triathlon and such, but I had in the last couple of years dealt with some things in my life, Pete, with the ending of this relationship that I had been in a relationship for many, many years. And I didn't realize how it was destroying me for a long time. And so since that ended in 2014, I had done some very serious soul searching about myself and realized that I didn't really love myself the way others loved me and the way God loved me. And so I did some real work spiritually and with my eating. And it didn't necessarily show on the scale, but, you know, I wasn't binging. I was eating, pursuing very good nutrition. Actually was a vegetarian for some years and thought that was the right choice at the time. But I still was eating too much. at times my portions weren't, I wasn't really paying attention to calories, and I was still very stressed, even though I, you know, it's that perfect, you know, it's like everybody's life, right? I mean, you can't work on everything at one time. So I was chipping away. I chipped away at some things that allowed me in January when I saw my doctor and she suggested something to me. It was something that I had for years said, absolutely not. I would not even consider that. If I do that, I will end up killing myself because I won't be compliant. I know how I am, you know, but some of that had changed and I was at a breaking point, and my doctor, I had my physical, and my doctor went off on me. She literally threw a fit in her office and was extremely upset with me. And we're friends. I mean, she's our family doctor. And she just said, I can't take this anymore. I cannot watch you do this to yourself because my knees are so bad, Pete. They were bone on bone. I just couldn't even walk in January. I could swim 6 miles, but I could not walk. Those winter swims that I was doing, my friends were like, I mean, they were carrying my stuff, helping me up and down that hill to the lake. I mean, I was really struggling. And my doctor, Andrea, suggested for the 10th time, probably, for years, every year on my physical, suggested bariatric surgery.
And when you're in the doctor's office, and I understand about your knees, is there other metabolic stuff going on? I mean, are you diabetic or pre-diabetic, or is all that okay?
I'm not diabetic, but I was working that. I was very smart. When I knew I was going to the doctor, I had weeks of very clean eating and no sugar. I mean, I was on my way to diabetes. I never had an A1C. As a matter of fact, the bariatric people wanted to run an A1C. Oh, let's do it just to see. And I said, no way. I've come this far without doing an A1C test. I'm not doing it now. I don't care. I don't want to know. I'm making changes now, right? So, but my doctor, it wouldn't have, if I had not taken action, that would have happened. There's no question, because even if I was eating so healthy, just where I was with my stress level and being at that weight and how that affects insulin and everything, I have just there's no question in my mind that I would have ended up with diabetes. And it doesn't even run in our family. My dad ended up with diabetes after age 90 just because of old age. I mean, my dad had been a steady 300 or 400 pounds. At one point, my dad weighed more than 400 pounds in his life and had never been diabetic, but he had high blood pressure. My dad was on high blood pressure medicine from the time he was 40 years old, and so was I. I was on blood. I'm about to get off it. My high blood pressure medicine. I was taking a pain medicine for my knees, and I was taking Mobic, which is an NSAID that was a miracle drug for me. I never realized it till I had to go off of it a couple months ago, how much it had helped my inflammation. And I had sleep apnea. So, you know, I say that I was healthy. Oh, well, I'm so much healthier. I'm not one of those people that's this or that. But was I really? Like, I had never had surgery. I had never been in the hospital. You know, I didn't have any super terrible injuries. But I wasn't healthy.
Yeah.
I was morbidly obese. Right. And I was the red lights were going off on the computer because of all the things. So sure. And so she freaked out. She doesn't remember when I saw her the last visit. She said, what are you talking about? She doesn't remember freaking out on me. She felt bad about it. She's apologizing. I said, don't ever apologize for the thing that you did. She said to me, and this was when I decided, she said, you are going to be in a wheelchair in 5 years. Who is going to take care of you? Which one of your nieces is going to sacrifice their life, or one of your siblings, or who, or are you going to be in a nursing home? Who's going to take care of you? Because your knees are not going to make it. And no doctor, you know, I had tried to get knee replacements and the doctor told me he wouldn't do it until I was down to 280. And I had never gotten down to 280. So I had never got my knee replaced. So she said she recommended bariatric surgery, and every year she would hand me that brochure, and on my way out of the office, before I even left the office, it would go in the trash can, because I'd say, there's no way I am going under the knife for a problem that is emotional. But I had dealt with all that, and I was in a really good place mentally. I was not in a good place physically. And some people say, oh, well, how is that possible? If you're in a good place mentally, you're... No, it's years of damage to your body. It took years for that to happen. You're not going to just switch it overnight, right? But I believe that I need help to take this weight off and to keep it off. I believe this is my best chance. Could I spend the next few years losing the 100 pounds that I'm about to lose without the surgery? I could. I probably could. But I have researched this to the ends of the earth. I have talked to tens. In the beginning, it was only a couple, but I have now discovered, you know, between James and many other people that, you know, in these last couple months that have come out of the woodwork to tell me, oh, I had bariatric surgery, and they're triathletes, and this is how I did it, you know. I am confident that I made the right decision, and I'm having the sleeve, you know, there's different procedures, right? There's gastric bypass is one of them. There's a band that some people get, which isn't very effective. And then there's this newer technology called the gastric sleeve, and it's a little bit, I think, less invasive to your body than the gastric bypass. Not that I don't think gastric bypass is a wonderful procedure for the people that choose it, but I have chosen to have the sleeve because I think it's more conducive to me being an athlete.
Yeah, you talked about James there for a second. I mean, he was a past guest on the show, and I think that's what he had was the sleeve.
Yeah,
and
I think, yeah.
His girlfriend had gastric bypass a long time ago, though. I want to say,
oh, okay.
I want to say 14 years ago. So,
oh, okay.
I'll give them a little plug. They just did their first episode of a podcast called The Bariatric Runner, and it's him and Annette talking about their bariatric decisions in their lives, and then living after bariatric surgery. It sounds like they're going to talk about a lot. So I listened to it. It's interesting, right? Because I don't know a lot about this. And that's, you know, I'm not sure I've known anybody who's had it until I talked to James and now you.
Yeah, really? Yeah, I know a lot of people. Like, I mean, some that I didn't even know, some that I thought, well, I wonder how they lost all that weight. And one key thing for me was making that decision on how I was going to, was I going to be forthright about it? You know, some people make a decision to not tell anyone they're having, and that's fine. I mean, I don't judge that, you know, but it's impossible in my life. You know what I mean? I think, as you have probably figured out, a huge family, 52, I think we're up to 55 immediate family members, just between my siblings, their kids, and their grandkids, and their husbands. And so I have that network, and then I have an extremely supportive church that I have been in for many, many years. Many of these people are my bestest friends, you know, and like family. And then I have my swimming community. I have my business community. I have so many people in my life. And I just, when I made this decision, it really surprised me, but I was like, you know what? I got to share this with people. People are going to learn from this. I'm sure, absolutely sure that along the way, there's people that judged me, and or who think I'm crazy for doing it. I suspect a couple people that I'm pretty sure they do think that, but no one has said it to me, because I think people respect that. I don't do things without thinking them through. Everybody in my life knows that. When I made the decision and I contacted my family and started letting people know, not one person, it was such a blessing. Especially my siblings, every one of them said, well, we know you thought this through and did your research. You know, like, I don't make decisions on things without really thinking about it. I'm not a whimsical person at all. You know, so I did my work, and I did the work. I did what the bariatric group expected from me, which is a very vigorous program. St. Luke's, Allentown is where I'm having my surgery, and the surgeon is Dr. Claros. it's no joke. These people, they don't, some people have told me they went in, applied, and a month later they were having surgery. They didn't have to lose anything. They went to one class, nutrition class, and they had an exam. I mean, I had to see a heart doctor. I had to have an endoscopy. It was the first time I had gone under, except for having my wisdom teeth out. I had never had a surgery in my life, or a procedure like that. I had to see a social worker. I had to do all of these things for my insurance to approve me, which they approved me overnight, which is pretty much unheard of in our little world of bariatric. Everybody's waiting for weeks to find out. And by some miracle, I had my last weigh-in on May 8th, and on May 9th at noon, the coordinator called me to tell me I was approved.
Oh, that's great. I mean, I'm fascinated by it, right? Because I'm definitely somebody who didn't have a very high opinion of the surgery for many, many years. I think probably same kind of visceral reaction that you had. But I'm really curious to see the after. You know, I've seen and gotten to talk with James. I can't wait to see kind of, you know, how it impacts you going forward, and how you eat, and how the nutrition on a long swim has to adjust, or does it have to adjust? And
it's going to have to adjust. It's going to have to adjust. We already tested some of it. I already tested some of it this weekend in the Long Island Sound, because I'm on liquids right now. Our bariatric group requires you to do a 2-week liquid diet before your surgery. So I have friends who said, oh, I went out for my big last meal. There's none of that. There is no option to have a big last meal. I mean, a couple weeks ago, I jumped off the Cape May Lewes Ferry and did a 1-mile swim. It was kind of a really celebratory weekend of a really cool race that I had always wanted to do. And we feasted a little bit that evening. You know, I had like a Caesar salad and a slice of calzone, you know what I mean? There's not, we're trying this liquid diet. The purpose is to shrink your liver down, because the doctor has to lift up. If you Google it, Pete, on YouTube, there's whole videos of this procedure. It's fascinating. They lift your liver up and your stomach's underneath, and they do it all arthroscopic. I'm going to have 5 tiny little incisions, nothing big. I mean, I'm going to be up and walking within a couple hours after my surgery.
Yeah, that's,
you have to walk.
Yeah, that's amazing to me. And I'm going to skip. I'm going to skip watching the videos, because I don't. I'm alone right now, and I'll pass out.
Okay.
I will get sick.
Really?
There is no doubt.
Yeah. Okay.
So we're gonna. I'll skip that. Yeah, I mean, I really do find it interesting and fascinating, and I'm actually really more interested in the kind of post-surgical nutrition. I mean, I know what James does, and I'm curious to get your take on what happens, you know, a couple of months down the line, and then to see how you're able to build back up with your endurance sports and kind of what happens.
I am planning to build up, because I'm planning to do some significant swims in September. So we'll see what happens. I tested with these fluids. I had gotten special permission from the dietitian to have oatmeal in the morning of last weekend when I did this long swim, because I was nervous about just sustaining myself just on fluids and not getting it, not having few carbs. So I upped my milk intake. I'm doing milk and protein shakes, a lot of protein shakes right now. So I had been doing soy milk or almond milk, and she said, you have got to start using regular milk, even if it's lactate, so that you get those 8 or 9 grams of carbs. And that did help. I started last Wednesday with milk instead of almond milk in my shakes. Then I did that oatmeal and in the morning on Saturday and Sunday, and it really was significant. But I am going to have some huge adjustments, because I've been doing solid foods for feeds while I swim, but I'll be honest with you, I'm not so convinced that what I did last summer was the perfect. I thought at the time, and it was all that experimentation, but I'm even with my fluid intake, I used to think I had a drink like every, 15 minutes, every 30 minutes while I'm swimming. On last Saturday, I did a 3-mile swim, and didn't take anything in for the whole 3 miles, and it was fine. So I'm not advocating that. I realize, you know, triathlon, everybody's so focused, and you know, my brother is a sports nutritionist, and so, and has done, you know, Lake Placid Ironman. He's all an advocate for, you know, absolute nutrition is so important for racing. But I think everybody is different, and I am willing to push myself a little bit as long as I have that safety net. You know, I was very close to the beach for this swim and such, you know. It'll be interesting. I'm excited to share it with people these next months to see how much can I eat, you know, how am I going to take in before a big swim when I can only take in a quarter of a cup of food at a time. That's what my tiny little stomach is going to allow, is a quarter of a cup of food.
Well, that's definitely going to be fascinating. So, well, we can't wait to reconnect with you down the line and hear all about that. But I've kept you on for about almost an hour and 15 minutes now. So I feel like I should wrap it up with you. But, I mean, thank you so much for coming on. If people do want to kind of see what's going on in your journey, how could they follow you? I know you're on Instagram. Is that the best place for them to do it?
Yeah, I would say I haven't been posting a lot on Instagram, but I do need to start posting more, I think, this journey. And I think that's probably the best way. So my Instagram account is Aqualu, just like it sounds, Aqualu, Aqualu.
Fantastic.
And there's a picture of me in open water on that. I'm pretty sure I haven't ever changed that profile picture.
So. That's weird.
Yeah.
Shocking.
Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, thanks so much for coming on. And, you know, we'll talk to you soon, and best of luck with the surgery.
Thanks. I'll let you know how it goes on Monday, Pete. Thank you so much for all your encouragement. Since I've met you and you've been encouraging me along the way, I've really appreciated it.
I do what little I can. Thanks so much. All right.
Here, have a good night. Give my best to Gretchen.
Will do.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, that was awesome. I can't thank Amy enough for coming on and sharing her story and her insights into open water swimming, which I knew nothing about really, and have been learning about, and how she views herself as an athlete, even though she's been battling weight. There's a lot of us out here who are athletic, who are bigger, and she's doing something about it now and wants to be seen more as an athlete than as a role model because of her size. And I commend her for that. And we wish her the best of luck in her upcoming bariatric procedure. And, you know, we want to make sure that you understand that that's one option. Although we've had two people on already as guests who have taken that route, or one is about to take that route. We're really about a balanced. And I think that after the surgery, James was really about being balanced. And I have a feeling Amy will be too. So, you know, everybody's got their own thing, and you've got to do what's right and find the path that works best for you. So that'll do it this week. Thank you for listening to episode 38 of the Fat Man Chronicles. You can find us online at fatmanchronicles.com. Social media is at Fat Man Stories. And please go to iTunes or your favorite podcast app and subscribe. And if you could leave us a review, if you're in Apple Podcasts, that would be fantastic. In the meantime, remember, get out there and be better today.